Hi everyone, I'm Jean-Michel, and today we will be chatting with a gentleman who's focused on dealing with the most pertinent problems in the video games industry. We've got Connor from Pogger. Connor from Pogger, welcome to the studio. How's it going, man?
It's going great. Thanks for having me, man.
Thank you for being here. So tell us a little bit about who you are and what your personal background is.
Awesome. Yeah. So I'm a long-term entrepreneur. Throughout high school, I started my first business that made money. It was kind of a wholesale dropshipping before dropshipping. Moved into college where I did artist management. I had a couple artists that I was working with. One is quite big now, you know, still growing. Still have a great relationship with them. But obviously, gaming took my heart with the rise of Fortnite. And there was just a lot of possibilities, a lot of attention in a place that I had a lot more knowledge than anyone else, where a lot of less people didn't have as much knowledge as me. So I saw a lot of opportunity and the chance to, grow with it. And I ended up building Pogger a little bit later down the road, and it's been great ever since.
Yeah, so you're clearly a gamer. I mean, besides the sort of background, I think the Secret Lab share was a bit of a giveaway. What exactly is Pogger and what's it about?
Sure, Pogger is a profile system. The secret sauce that we used is everyone right now in the space, if they're even trying to attempt this, is either doing this in a siloed space, which means that they're not sharing or aggregating data from other publishers or developers or brands. I literally had a brain thought, so apologies on that. So it's either siloed right now, or it's just too expensive to build and aggregate. So there's just no data there. The kind of third option is if it's scraped from an API. So we did something else. We built an SDK, collects data directly from the game engine. So that's quite special. But once it's attached to this consumer-facing profile, it unleashes this incredible benefits, specifically being that brands are now interested. This means enterprise clients are now funneling money into this ecosystem and this kind of space, which there wasn't getting a lot of attention. Investors tried with esports organizations and it wasn't really working out too much. And everyone's kind of been dragging their feet, walking on eggshells around it. So our whole goal was, besides a profile system that a gamer has from the moment they sign on, to a toolkit any developer can use to make their game better. It's kind of creating this flywheel where gamers have opportunities. They get more because people understand who they are. Developers understand their community, can make things more specific for those groups. And you pair that together and you get quite a special platform. There's a lot of stuff you can build on top of it. We like to think of it as a new gaming tech stack, where the first couple Legos, and then you add matchmaking services, you add video analysis, you add collaboration and discovery of other friends, just to name a few.
So the idea, like if I understood that correctly, by implementing this SDK specifically into the game engine and then collating that data from multiple game providers, you can sort of create a one gamer profile that rules them all. Is that right?
100%. And from my early days, seeing the possibilities at FaZe Clan, I saw how much of a necessity this is. Wasn't just for like the amateur wannabe gamer myself who wanted to go all the way up, but also the fact that these organizations like didn't understand anything about the players, you know? So it's like, I worked in music for a little bit and I did A&R at Atlantic, you know, and all they did was go and like through this website, Sodatone, wait and like discover. There was no like searching and finding yet, like in gaming, when there's there's so much more data. Why aren't they doing this? Why are they doing this old school way? So it really just made me start scratching my head. And that was kind of like the first trickle. But yeah, like you were saying as well, right now, a lot of studios that are siloed, they have all this information on data, but it's one little sliver of the giant pie. You know, your source of truth is maybe 5% of their total game time. You know, how is that beneficial for a brand or yourself that you're basing very massive decisions off such little information? So for the first time, we're trying to provide an entire picture. And yes, that comes in this one size fit all profile where it's a gamer comes in and all their achievements, all their stats, everything is integrated into Pogger. Obviously, we're going live in July with our like first 20 games, first like 1,000 players. But the whole goal is to be a domino, you know, where it's slowly, 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 we become that platform where games reach out to. We don't have to go and acquire games as much. There's enough of a value proposition to either have, we have enough players to where it's a discoverability platform, or we offer enough tools to where it's almost impossible or tough to start a game and build a game without it. You know, we're hoping to have a lot of examples with like amateur esports orgs that are really being able to take on big dogs. There's a lot of stuff to be excited about, but you're exactly correct.
Yeah, I know you, but you sort of touched on a very interesting point, right? Like there's multiple benefits of this approach to many different parties, right? So from a player perspective, it benefits them because they can finally get true representation of their skills, right? I mean, and that, like there's a sort of commercial aspect, but let's sort of leaving the commercial aspect out. Like one of the most important things I think to any true gamer is bragging rights, right?
100%.
That's up there, right? EPing, as it were. So you know, being able to say that you know, like this is my true KD or this is the true total number of kills I've had across, you know, across all these different
100%.
Games. Like, yeah, sure, you might beat me in Battlefield, but you know, as far as COD goes, and if we look at things globally, yeah. I own you every day of the week, no?
Yeah, what is your overall gamer score? You know, like what is that across all games? Like how does it factor in? How is it weighted? These are things like we wanna do. Like when I looked at this, like I love your excitement for the consumer side. Like I wanted to build this for my previous self, you know? Whereas like I was competing in these tournaments, but I was getting nowhere, you know? It's like, I wanted this pipeline, you know? Why can all these other athletes go in and find like their way into scholarships, into like giant offers? And there's these very, very talented gamers that just are hoping or signing on to predatory deals just to get a chance to make it. So that's just one of many things, opportunities to play games for the first time because a developer understands that you fit their model better. And then, yeah, like you're saying, the compare and contrast. It's like you and your friends after a game, you can compare with yourself, the guy that you played against in the last match. All of your friends are in a little clan. You can understand who's great. And for the first time, you're not having to guess. You're not having to get in that long argument. Well, you still may be arguing because you're better and they don't want to accept it. At least you can prove it, you know? And there's like hard data. And like you said, it never leaves you. Like I remember the good old days of the Microsoft profile where it's like you had all those points, you had those achievements, you wanted to unlock, like spend hours in a game finding little things because like that mattered to you, you know? And where did they go? They're gone. You can't these hard achievements. I was a big WoW player. So like world firsts or getting AOTC, you know, it's like those are important. And like certain bosses getting AOTC like Raz in the most recent patch, like that's important. You know, it's like that was like killed by less than like 1,000 guilds total. So it's like these are
exactly
big things,
so. That's real value, right? Like so, WoW is I think the best sort of example you could have given. Like I did WoW for like 5 years and gave way too much time to that thing. I think it was like 270 days on my paladin alone, kind of thing. So I totally hear what you're saying, right? And I think it solves a sort of problem in another interesting way, right? Because like as an esports player, yes, sort of having those achievements and sort of losing touch with But those achievements is a sort of deep personal loss, right?
Because 100%.
When you get some really important achievement in a WoW, it means a lot, right? Some of them I still remember to this day, but we're sort of going down the really fucking nerdy path now. So, but apart from that, take for example guilding.
Yeah.
Right. So if I'm a guild, if I'm a serious guild, whether it's in World of Warcraft or Lord of the Rings Online or Final Fantasy Online, whatever the game is, right? If I'm a serious guild, I have a proper recruitment process.
100%.
Now, if I'm signing on, there's no way for me to be able to sign on a person who is an expert in game A into game B without I'm taking on a huge risk, right? Because if I bring this one idiot in the party for a raid night and he destroys everything, I've just pissed off 20 to 40 people, right?
Yeah.
Depending on the game. And so, yeah. So if I had this system, you know, guild recruiting would be a much easier process, like much easier
100%.
Process.
And it's a wider net. It's like you can see right off there that it's like, hey, like some of these big mega guilds have multiple games that they're top in, you know? So it's like in most MMO or like kind of adventure fantasy like players on that higher end, they seem to be in that same bubble. So it's like, hey, we're not just recruiting you for this one game. We can start recruiting this wider net of like, hey, we're recruiting for all the games that we play as a guild. Like, sure, we're going to take the top players, but we want someone who's going to spend their 80% of their allotted game time in the three games that our guild focuses on, you know? So it's like a different thing versus having all of these siloed experience. Like, guild recruitment is a very, very good example of how it'll be mimicked throughout all kind of like levels of an organization, you know, down to the amateur. Like, it's like if you're trying to start something and take it off the ground, like we give you those tools. But then it's like you want to compete, the same tools, just at a little bit more of a professional level. And I think the great thing is like we're not really charging gamers or developers, you know. It's like we have a whole business model where it's we're working with enterprise clients and kind of like using our white label solution for their closed ecosystem. You know, we're building and testing all these features with our internal like process and community, and then offering that as a white label solution elsewhere. So it's like we're giving something that a lot of these gamers don't get. It's a tool for free. You know, it's like they get charged for everything. I know that. I'm happy to do it because for the longest time, it's like these developers are working hard to give us something great, and I'm happy to do that. But it's like, it's adding up with as much like content, like games are coming out without as much content depth, you know. Maybe ChatGPT will change that. There's a lot of cool stuff there, but for the time being, it's like we want to be on gamers' good sides. We want to not charge developers unless they're scaling to a point where they can grow with us, you know, once they hit that 100,000 a month mark. So it's like until that point in time, we're not putting up any resistance on your end, and we're just trying to make sure that you succeed. Because I think one of the big issues, and we noticed this, is there's not too many games that have over, like, I would say, like, in the grand scheme of things on Steam, there's not many games that have more than 1,000 monthly active players. You know, there's maybe like 10,000, you know, 15,000. It's like there's more and more games coming, but it's like, are they known? Like, are they getting to that second or third patch update? Are they understanding what the community likes or dislikes? And it's like, if they are, it's like, how are they finding that out? You know, it's like, what resources are they expending to do that versus, and I feel like great games are good. We're going to have that wild, wild west where it was like Warcraft 3 custom game era round 2. Like it is happening again. Like, I still play Legion TD. I play the new one that's on Steam. You know, I play Dota. I play League. You know, I still go in there.
Dota last night, man. Come on.
The new update is beautiful. So
I love it. New map is great.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things that I feel like will benefit this space because there's so much creativity. And there's just so much like passion behind these projects. It's just enough hurdles stacking up in front of you just like makes it impossible. It's like, are you going to give up your family for this dream? Are you going to give up your like entire like early life, you know, and all of your salary, you know, versus it's like we can start chipping away at the overall price point that it costs you to like get a game to a production, and then not just get to a production because that's half the battle, making sure you're getting to that third or fourth update so that the community sees, like, that's what a community likes. Like, everyone puts out a game and like, I'll wish list it. We'll see how it goes. You know, we'll see if it goes on sale, unless it starts getting all these reviews that make it great. And it's like, do you know if they're farmed reviews? Are they legitimate? So it's like this giant question in the indie developer space. And that's been like the biggest hurdle us getting across on the funding side, is us saying we're not really charging anyone in this space early. And we're not really even going after the big dogs. You know, it's like, we're talking to the big dogs now, like, don't get me wrong, but like, our original approach when we raised our round was like, we are going to fix this for the indie game studios. And that's why we're really happy with VentureRock. They saw that like, this small scale goes into something bigger. You know, there has to be a lot of validation before it gets to this point where you can really be what these big titans are standing on. Until then, we need to prove the concept and grow. And then hopefully it's a better gaming world. You know, it's like through all of these kind of like features and just transparency. So
yeah, absolutely. And I think like one thing that's extremely unique about the gaming industry is that it's got one of the most demanding, elitist, especially like PC Master Race gaming, right? It's got the most elitist customer base of all time. It's like, if you've slightly imbalanced the power of this axe versus this shield, you're gonna get demolished by the community, 100%. Right? And that sort of balancing of game theory, so that's what it is, essentially. It's game theory, right? Like, balancing that out is an extremely monumental task for most industries. So having like what your service does is allows indie game studios and eventually even larger game studios to take the focus off player acquisition, just because they now have all this data that they can leverage, right? Because they know that this player is now playing that game. He plays an FPS game, plays it for 40 hours a week, and then 40 hours a week must be a hell of a gamer, and then plays maybe like 10 hours of a MOBA, right?
Yeah.
But just because this person's only interacted with my game for 2 hours, it doesn't mean that person isn't a hardcore gamer and is not my proper target demographic, right? So
100%.
If I can, and that's what brings down early games, right? It's just all of these different plates which you need to balance to until you finally hit some sort of critical mass. And
there's a lot of cookie jars, and you only have one hand, you know. So it's, or I guess you have two, but you know, it's tough. Like, you only have one. I completely understand it. And beyond just these game studios understanding what they kind of need and what their wants are from the customer basis, it's slowly being able to grow with them. You know, it's, you're able to identify, sure, it's like, oh, this person, let's use an exact example from New World. When New World put out their map, like, they did a Twitch lottery system, Asmund Gold, Tim the Tap Man, all these guys, what'd they want to do? They went and abused that world so hard. They figured out ways to max skinning instantly. They're killing like early players. Like, they're doing all of this stuff and just to get the attention or meme clips from Asmund Gold. You know, it's like, ha 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 for him. Amazon was building their own game engine. They put hundreds of millions of dollars into advertising, into building this world for years, and it's just gone. Like, because it's like, they tried two releases. They're like keeping it up, but like, they're not really even developing too much on it. It was this big project, gonna revolutionize the WoW killer. And that's the biggest game. So it's like, why are all these games fighting this issue? Because they get a huge spike in player bases. The players who may have been interested are like, why the fuck am I going to wait 20 hours in queue? Why am I going to go and join when the auction house is already owned? Like, this is the like enjoyment for playing this game, for me being curious, is terrible. Versus I'm going to just go back and play WoW, where I have my guild and I know what's good and I don't have to wait in a queue. So it's like, these MMO people are loyal because it's like, it's a big commitment to be like, hey, I'm going to start a new, fresh MMO game and I'm going to care about achievements and I'm going to care about getting to the max level and I'm going to care about cosmetics, you know, making myself get roots. You know, it's like, so by introducing almost a system, and this is one of the things we're doing where it's like, hey, we're a new game. Pogger, can you send us the first 5,000 players that fit the demographic that have maybe filled out a ticket in the past 3 months, have done beta access? You know, it's a new pipeline for players to kind of help games grow, you know, and like being rewarded for it, you know, like there will truly be a founder's pack that's not just a $9.99 cosmetic, you know, it's like, hey, like you helped us get to this point where we're now at 100,000 active users. You know, it's like, here's this thing where it's like, oh, you have this cosmetic where you've helped throughout this, or some sort of badge, you know, or you had a head start on kind of data and strategies for being the content creator you want. Like, that's what a lot of these big gamers want. They want to grow with the game. Like, that's how you become big. There's games that make players, you know? Players don't really make games that often unless they're gigantic and the game's already great. But a game 100% can make new stars. So being there early, letting people know that you're the best, and helping more games get to that point will just be better for the community. And that's just like one of the things we're solving.
Yeah, I mean, on top of that, right? I mean, you're de-risking for the game studio, and that's fantastic, right? I think it almost seems to me like you're going up against Google Ads.
Yeah, I would say in a way like Google Analytics, that whole kind of space. The one benefit is like Google's not going out and putting their SDK into games, you know? Everything they're collecting is based off search optimization, and they have a fight of their own, you know? They're fighting the AI war with Bard and OpenAI. They're dealing with that. And it's also kind of blessed on our end. The other big competitor, Steam. Steam with the game publishing, discoverability, they're normally predatory market practices. Sorry, Steam. But it's like, I love you guys, 200 games on there. But they're going through a class action lawsuit right now, you know? It's like for monopolizing the industry, you know? So it's like we're in this perfect world where it's like these kind of big dogs that have maybe like the Datadogs, the Google, all of these companies that have cloud infrastructure, the processes in place to really deal with this, they're fighting battles that are more prominent to their survival, you know? This is a small problem in their grand scheme of things, still a multi-billion dollar problem. And then the other customer that could genuinely take us out, and this is their market of interest, has to deal with staying alive. You know, the last thing that they need is them to be like, oh, you guys are doing an antitrust lawsuit while also taking out any sort of like up and coming like benefit for this space. You know, it's the tale's old as time, you know, the Apple Microsoft thing. It's like, would you rather see your company die or invest in your second competitor and at least understand, hey, like we have another chance to keep growing. Maybe they'll stop this monopoly talk. And it's like, that's what gave Apple its breath of life, you know? So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think besides the sort of monopoly issue that we're facing, I think one of the other issues which you could solve, right, is like you mentioned earlier, it's very difficult for a gamer to become pro, right? And it's very difficult for esports teams to scout people.
100%.
Right? So plus, I mean, like on one hand, you have sort of adults dealing with children, so that creates its own kind of sort of weird.
Yeah,
exactly. But you know, but with a system like this, I mean, it sort of takes the guessing work out of the game, right? And to your previous point also, esports teams generally play in different games 100%. As well.
100%. Right? And I'd love to touch on this because probably like one of my first features that I thought of for Pogger after the profile system was the pipeline to pro, you know, it's like that whole kind of idea and concept. So like you can look at this from like three different ecosystems. And the first ecosystem is like the traditional, hey, like we're 100 Thieves, we're a FaZe Clan, we're a TSM, like we're trying to build academy teams, X, Y, and Z. And then there's like the slight adjacent, but a little bit lower because they don't have the funding or the outside funding. They're using their own brand and sponsorships is the influencers. You know, you've seen this with Disguised Toast, XQC's mentioned it. There's a bunch of people in the space trying to build these one team amp, like one team in one game using their brand and all the sponsorships to do it. It's like managing that would be very easy. Scouting talent outside your friends or who your talent manager points out is very important. And then here's the big kind of leap into a kind of new space where it's like these college campuses are all trying to make their esports program and really build it out. Like, how are you going to identify people outside of like social media followers in this space? You know, because it's like, if they have 10, 20,000 followers, unless you give them a full ride in X, Y, and Z, they're going to go to an esports org, you know, unless their parents tell them they have to go to college first. So it's like, how do you source and find talent that is good enough to be on a college esports team, but not good enough to become a professional esports player? Like, that's a huge kind of like opening in the space just alone. And then the third one is emerging markets. So it's like right now, like there's a rise of like the Saudis, you know, Saudi Arabia, you know, like Dubai, like Cairo, like all these kind of emerging, I would say even India, all these emerging markets, like games like Crossfire that rivals CSGO. It's like these markets are all trying to fly in pros, you know, the whole like Saudi strategy of acquire the best, you know, the best isn't always the best. They have the biggest brand, they're verified throughout time. But going and being like, all right, we can build a team of people from who are in our region. You know, we can put them in an esports facility, have them training, you know, and it's like they are actually there. It's like their culture, like the people that they know. And like, it's not this huge, like bringing five or six players from all this different thing. They're all online because they all have their lives elsewhere. You could really like search and build it in these emerging markets. So it's like this kind of whole process for gamers and this pipeline like just didn't exist. And like when you're talking about these younger parents, like if you have this as the giant pipeline of like what's possible, and we do a fully opt-in parental control like option where it's like, hey, you know, your kid's gonna fucking game. Sign in, only you have access on it. You can manage their play time. Like you can see across everything, like where it is. You can use this data for all the stuff. There's momagers for acting. There's like those soccer coach dads, you know, it's like there's just as many of those people for gaming. So like analyzing your kid's data, hey bud, we need to work on this. Seems like you're getting a little too aggressive out there, you know, like really like start to manage it from a young age and then use those resources. Like my kid's been the top player in X, Y, and Z game for 5 years, you know, it's like there's all these ways to make this a kind of like similar process to like how they apply for college and stuff like that. Just because what I saw, and I'll leave this kind of like topic at this, is like with my last company, Stropesy, like we're interviewing these 14 and 15 year old kids who are winning these Fortnite tournaments and paying off their family's debt, like 10, 20 years of debt, they're paying it off, you know? So it's like the possibilities, it's like, sure, it's like, oh, you can shake your head and be like, they shouldn't be gaming, they shouldn't be doing X, Y, and Z. But it's like some people, it's like gaming is saving them, you know? And it's like, I'm not over here trying to enable a bunch of kids to just be like, oh, we're going to be professional athletes. But for the ones who are, they deserve the same opportunities, you know? So, absolutely. Yeah, we're quite excited for that. So,
and that I think that is the holy grail of all gamer problems. As a child, yep, show me a way I can justify playing games to my parents and help me explain to my parents in a simple way what the progression path is from where I am to where I make enough money that they shut the hell up and I can keep playing. Yeah. I can keep playing and keep making money. That's one massive problem, which if you can sort of hone in on that, I think you'll have mass adoption straight away.
It's going to be a big journey and a long journey, but we have a lot of faith. We have good partners. We've been meeting great people who all believe, who are gamers like yourself, myself. And that's the real thing. It's you get enough people who wanted this when they were younger, and as hopefully some of them who have money who can help fund your dreams, and then yeah, you create a new tomorrow. So
sounds like a beautiful tomorrow. I can't wait to see what it looks like. Connor, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. Have a lovely day.
All right, thank you for having me. Cheers.